The spiritual message. And that has been divided. I divided that into two parts. Somehow it seems to naturally divide that way. One is the part one today. We're thinking of the scriptural basis. And part two, next week, the emphasis will be on the tradition as it has been handed down by the lineage of spiritual teachers from those ancient days. So Vedanta means the spiritual message, means the scriptural basis. Vedanta is the anta, the end of the Vedas, the end of the concluding portion of the scriptural literature that is the basis of this movement. And that scriptural basis fundamentally is the Upanishads. The end of the Vedas means literally the last portion of the Vedas that was developed. And it contains the discoveries, the spiritual discoveries of those who had reached beyond what we normally consider. You don't need this scriptural basis or this authority or this ancient tradition. You don't need that to do the ordinary things of life. It doesn't help you to understand the mechanics of things and the science of things as they are understood in these days. It's not the scriptures, the Upanishads, though they can totally support us in every aspect of our life, practical as well as theoretical. And it becomes, in fact, it is a necessity to understand this Vedanta before we can even do the most ordinary things in life in an efficient, or let's put it this way, in a meaningful way. But the Upanishads are not intended to teach us the ordinary things that we can learn by ourselves from the study of phenomena in this world. The Upanishads are intended to give us an idea of that which is a tremendous yearning within our hearts to understand the basis of all of our experience, to understand where we come from and where we are headed. So it is the main purpose is to delve into the fundamentals of things. The details have been worked out in the modern sciences in a very thorough way and continue to be so thoroughly worked on. There is something within us that propels us to great efficiency on the material plane. If there is an obstacle in our material or psychological path in this world, great energy is aroused and great ingenuity is aroused in approaching that, studying it, trying to overcome it. But Vedanta's specialty is in those areas where that does not happen. Those areas that remain deep, dark areas within ourselves, dark in the sense that it is an area that is unknown or unexplained, but utterly fundamental to our existence. So much so that all these things that science so successfully enables us to deal with and to understand seem utterly secondary in importance once this is not only understood but deeply felt, that what we need in our life is an answer to these very fundamental questions. We need that more than anything else. These other things are comparatively easy, comparatively straightforward. But the basic, the foundation of everything, that's where the difficulty comes in. So what do these ancient teachers say about all this? How do they view this universe? How do they view our experience? How do they view that our needs, our desires, the deep yearnings of our hearts, how do they view that? And they discovered, as was discovered in all the major religions of the world, in this, in Vedanta, this also was discovered, that there is a reality, whatever name you give to it, there is a reality that is a fundamental truth of our existence. That it isn't that we come out of an unknown past, find ourselves in this world, alive for a certain length of time, and then proceed on to something else that we know not. The ancient Scandinavian people had the idea that life was like a warm, well-lit hall. Of course, Scandinavia in the winter is extremely cold, so warmth was certainly an emphasis there. But that warmth, the cheeriness of a fire, is still, even today, in where all modern facilities are available, a cheery fire in front of a, sitting in front of a fireplace. There's a certain charm to that. Anyway, they thought that this life was like this, like a well-lit, warm, well-lit hall. And a bird comes flying in. We are that bird. And spends some, out of the darkness, out of the unknown, spends some time in that warm, well-lit hall. And then proceed on back into that darkness. That, under ordinary circumstances, that's where we are. We don't know what came before. We don't know what's coming after. And this experience here also is not always a warm, well-lit hall either. The whole thing is surrounded by a vague space, in which there's no understanding, in which there's no knowledge. So this was the problem that the ancient people who were, from whom these Upanishads came, this is the problem they set to themselves to find, what is that? That was the basic question. So in the Mundaka Upanishad, we start with that famous question, kasminnu bhagavo vijñāte sarvam idam vijñātam bhavati. What is that? Kasmin vijñāte, that having been known, it's a locative absolute for those who are interested in grammar. Anyway, that phrase, kasminnu vijñāte, what is that, knowing which? Sarvam idam, all of this, vijñātam, all of this becomes known. What is that knowing which everything becomes known? What is that experience, that knowledge, which helps us to make sense of everything? That is the idea. That is the basic question of our life. Otherwise, other things in our life we have means of handling. We can go to schools, we can go to training courses, we can do so many things. We can go to psychologists, psychiatrists, all these things can be approached. But that one idea, what is the foundation of everything, is not to be found that way. So how are we to find it? That is the question. So in this Mundaka Upanishad, that is the question that is asked. What is that knowing which everything becomes known? And so what is the answer that the teacher gives? He replies, by giving a list of all the things that are known, all the things that were known in his day. And he says there are two kinds of knowledge. There's the lower knowledge and the higher knowledge. And the lower knowledge consists of, and he lists all the things that were, the categories, the things that were known or that were considered as knowledge in his day. The Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, the Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, that's all the sacred scriptures. And then phonetics, the code of rituals, grammar, etymology, metrics, and astronomy. Astronomy means astrology. And the astronomy that's part of the of astrology. So that was the basis of the of knowledge in those days. To that we could add physics, chemistry, biology, and everything else of our present day. In fact, everything that we know, everything that we know normally, everything that we use in our professional lives, all the skills and all the formulations and methods that we use, that is all the lower knowledge. So that leaves us pretty well high and dry. What if that is the lower knowledge? What is the higher knowledge? We have no idea of anything else. Everything that we know now is the lower knowledge. Okay, fine, wonderful. But tell us, what is different from that? What is the higher knowledge? And the answer to that is yaya taraksharam adhigamyate, that by which, yaya, that by which, that aksharam, akshara means destructible, akshara means indestructible, adhigamyate, that is to be reached, to be attained. So what is that? Everything that we know normally is considered, because we already know it and it hasn't satisfied us. So by definition, what we now know is insufficient. That's not a negative, casting a negative aspersion on what we know. It's just that saying that what we normally know is not designed to answer the questions that we're asking, the fundamental questions that we're requiring an answer to. So this is the famous statement which really defines very clearly, very precisely, what Vedanta is. That knowledge, para, how is it described? Yaya, that by which tad aksharam adhigamyate, that by which the akshara, the immovable, the unchangeable, the fundamental is attained. Now that gives us two pieces of information. First of all, it tells us there is such a thing. And second, that it can be reached, it can be attained. It's not something that's beyond us, that's something that's, oh yes, after death you will go to a certain place and there you will understand all these things. In certain respects, that may be true, but in this fundamental respect, it is not true. So it can be attained. So first of all, it tells us that are the normal, what we know normally is not, you know, the answer to our basic heartfelt question, what is the fundamental truth, what is the ultimate reality, what is the essence of things, what is the basis of all this. What we know normally will not give us the answer. That is the first piece of information. The second piece of information is there is a way to get to that place. There is a way to answer that question. And then it explains, this Mundaka Upanishad explains that what we normally see, there is something beyond that. There is something, and this something, the fundamental truth that we are looking for, is not something that's visible on the surface. It's something that you have to dive deep within the reality of your own self to get. It is not something that is visible or graspable or originated or attribute, has a certain attributes. It is the foundation of everything. It is all-pervading, eternal, immeasurably subtle and limitless. So there is such a thing. And the question is, how is it to be attained? What is the method of reaching it? And it also discusses how is it that this comes out? How, if that is the fundamental reality, how is it that this universe appears? Where does its universe come from? How is it that that is the fundamental truth, fundamental reality, the basis of everything? Then what is this, the relationship of this universe, of what we do perceive, what we do see? What is its relation to that? So it explains from this universal reality, this, from the background, from the basis of everything, this universe originates. It appears in a natural way, just as hair grows on the body. It's not, we don't make any effort about it, but it just appears and it just grows. In a very natural way, this universe arises out of that imperishable. So this gives us the basic foundation of what it is that we're looking for. It's a fundamental reality of everything. And if you look, if you think about what is it that we know, what is it that we experience, what is the reality of what we experience? Is the reality contained in the observable, what we see? Is that, how can we reach that which is described in this way as being fundamental? It is ungraspable, unoriginated, attributeless. It has neither eyes nor ears nor hands nor feet. It is eternal. It is all-pervading. It is immeasurably subtle. And it's limitless. That imperishable being is what the wise perceive as the source of all creation. In so many ways, it's described in so many of the Upanishads. One of the... But still, we have to try to find some way of making contact with that. And one of the ways that's described is in this way. If you're looking at something, various things that are made of gold, you're looking at a bracelet, you're looking at a necklace, you're looking at a plate, you're looking at various things that are made of gold. And you're trying to describe these things. What is it that is the important part of the description? You're seeing all these various things, and they have a substance and they have qualities. So what is the essential characteristic of everything that we see? It's the substance. All these things that are made of gold, the substance is all gold, but name, form, and function are different. They're all made of gold, but a necklace is different from an earring. The name, the form, the function are different, but the essence is the same. The essence is gold. So you say, well, that's very nice, but it's quite trivial. What does it have to do with us? It is the very essence of the problem. We look at each other and we say, oh, I'm different from that person, and that person is different from another person. And then the human beings are different from animals, and animals and human beings both are different from immovable objects. And the essence of a building is certainly different from the essence of a living being. But what the Upanishad is saying, the key, the heart of it all, is the same as the example of all these things that are made of gold. The name, the form, the function are all different, but the essence is the same. So we are different people and there are different objects around us and we say everything is different. And we glory in trying to minutely describe the differences of things. And the glories of science basically come from the fact of being able ever more accurately to describe to the very minutest detail the difference of things. And that gives rise to a tremendous number of practical realities. But it completely bypasses the main point because it leaves us with a basic difficulty. What is it? I don't see any essence anywhere. God is present everywhere, but I don't see any of that. I may feel in my moments of quiet or meditation, I may feel the existence of some reality of that sort. But In the general run of things, in my general life, in my general experience, I don't feel that. I just see these things. These are all different things doing different jobs. They are constructed for different purposes. I see nothing but differences, and I glory in those differences, and I very precisely examine everything that I deal with in terms of difference. Our whole life is shaped by the seeing of difference. It is only by the seeing of difference in the most precise and accurate way that we are able to live in this world at all. Of course, I use the usual example. If you see a light up there as you're moving along, it makes a great deal of difference whether that light is red or is green. And if you simply decide to ignore that, it has tremendous consequences. But this is at the level at which we normally live. This is utterly essential that we should do this. But then we complain, well, we're not getting to anything, we don't feel anything different. What I felt when I was, 15 years old, 20 years old, I still feel the same. I had the same questions, I've got no answers. Nothing has happened. Well, the point is nothing ever will happen if this is where we stop our inquiry. The point is the Upanishad is explaining this very profound idea. It's not what is different among things that is crucial. It is what is the same. It's by seeing unity that we can make deep spiritual progress. By seeing differences, we become extremely adept at navigating in this world. But it's exactly the opposite what we need to find the basic reality of things. What is it that is the same here? I have to try to see what is it that is the same here. When I look at a person, when I look at an animal, when I look at a thing, when I think of certain things, whatever it is trying to find the unity that gives us that what we really want to know. Because when we look at what is the same everywhere, it cannot be on the surface. Because the surface is totally different. A human being certainly has nothing on the surface in relation to an object. Name, form, and function are totally different. But what is the essence? The essence is what we are looking for. It's the essence that is that Brahman, that is that reality, that is that consciousness, that whatever name you give to it. And that is what meditation is supposed to do. In meditation, you're actually quieting all the external phenomena and you're wishing well to all beings, which means you're seeing the commonality among all beings. You're seeing their, trying to deal with them at their most fundamental level. So that is the crucial thing. That is the direction we have to move in order to make progress in this direction. So now we're examining the fundamentals of Vedanta. Part of that will be, for instance, one of the verses in the Kathua Upanishad, that from which the sun rises and into which it sets. In that reality, everything else is fixed. That is that same idea to see within all that moves, within all phenomena, to see that which is the fundamental essence. One of the key verses comes from the Kathopanishad. Yadeveha taramutra, yaramutra taranviha. So what is yat eva indeed iha here? What is here? Taramutra, that also is there. Yaramutra taranu iha, taranviha. What is there is also here. See, it's that same emphasis. To try to find out what is the unity, what is the same between this thing and that thing. These different ornaments that are made of gold, to concentrate upon the gold. It is the gold that is the answer to the question. What is the essence of all these ornaments? It's quite obvious to everyone. Of course, the essence is the gold. Name, form, and function, who cares? The essence is gold. That we do with respect to an obvious instance like that. But when we confront any phenomenon in this life, we don't think of it that way. We very much react to that which is different. And we consider that to be the defining characteristic. And in that way, we never get to the central reality that we're really aiming for. Whatever is here, that is there. Whatever is there, that same is here. He who sees them as different meets with death again and again. See, everyone, we have come into existence, we will die. That is guaranteed. No one has lived beyond some age, 132 years, I think I heard. And then some mythological characters lived for 800 years or something like that. But nevertheless, there is an end to it. And there's one mythological character, Ashwatthama, in the Indian spiritual tradition, who, as a punishment, actually was, he would live forever. He was never to die. And that was his punishment. Also in Greek mythology, there's the Sibyl, who asked Apollo for, Apollo wanted, please ask whatever you want. So she took two handfuls of sand from the seashore and said, I want to live as many years as there are grains of sand in my hand. And so he said, all right, that's fine. So she lived on and on and on. And she became so tired she could not die. She desperately wanted to end all of this. What is this, getting older and older, experiencing it again and again and again and again and not getting anywhere? But she could not die. So in that sense, death is a renewal. Another chance to try to get it right. And so that is our work, to try to find a way to get that right, a way to understand, a way to develop ourselves. So whatever is here, that is there. What is there, the same is here. He who sees things as different, he has to go through this again and again. But then the next verse explains, Manasai Vedam Aptavyam. By the mind, this is to be understood. In other words, the mind is capable of reaching to that. At that point, the mind is not there, but the mind is the can also be the way to reach it. The mind is the only thing, the only tool we have to reach it. So the purification of the mind or dealing with the mind in the ways described in the various spiritual traditions, this is the way to approach that. Manasaivedam aptavyam. This is to be manasa. This is by means of the mind. That's the instrumental case. And what is it that is to be understood? What is it that is to be reached? Neha nanasti kinchana. Na iha. Not here. Nana. Multiplicity. Asti is. Kinchana in any sense. Multiplicity does not exist here in the slightest. There is no multiplicity here. Then what is it, all the differences that we see here? We see nothing but differences. We live our life seeing differences. Again, it's that same idea. What is it that is the same here? To, first of all, feel the possibility of that reality. Then to feel to actually try to perceive. Among all these ornaments of gold, we're always distracted by, oh, this is such a wonderful creation made of gold, and this is some other creation made of gold. We don't concentrate upon the metal at all. This is, our minds have, in another place, it says the creator. In the Katha Upanishad, the creator has created an injury, has caused an injury to the mind by causing the mind to focus only on outward things and neglecting the inner reality. This is how our life is going. This is how our life is construed by seeing these differences. So, neha nanasti, manasai vedam aptavyam, by the mind this is to be understood. Neha nanasti kinchana, there's no multiplicity here. Mrityo samrityung gacchati, from mrityoho, from death, samrityum, to death, gacchati, he goes, or she goes, or it goes. Who goes from death to death? Ya iha nan eva pasyati, the one who here, iha nana, multiplicity, eva, in seemingly, as it were, sees. It isn't that multiplicity is the essence of what we're seeing, but we're insisting on seeing that multiplicity, but it's only as it were, we're trying. We see that things are different, but it's only an as it were. It's only a seeming. It only seems that way. Instead of seeing the reality that is flashing in front of us, we insist on seeing the differences between one thing and another. And then, where is this reality to be found? Where is this reality first to be seen? It can be seen everywhere because the essence of everything is that gold. So if I insist on seeing the gold rather than the nicety of the decorations and how beautiful the surface is, if I insist on seeing the inner reality of things, this is available to me right now. But the fact that what actually happens is I see everything like water pouring down from the sky onto a mountain peak. The water scatters in all directions. In that same sense, yatha yathodakam durge vrishtam, as as water poured on a peak, as rain pouring on a peak, Parvateshu in the mountains, Vidhavati as it flows in different directions, as water pouring down on a mountain flows off in different directions. Evam dharman pratak pasyanta, seeing the characteristics as different, we chase them in all directions. Our life is a chasing after this and a chasing after that, and I must do this and I must devote myself to that. At one level, that is very advisable. At one level, that is very considered very praiseworthy. But if the question is, that we're trying to find the truth of things, we're trying to find the essence of things, we're trying to find something here that does not die, then that is not the way. So he says, as rainwater hitting a peak in the mountains flows off in different directions, so when we look at just the surface of things, we move in so many different ways, but it all, we don't get to the essence of things until finally all these waters are congregated together into one stream flowing into that ocean of reality. So as long as we look at things as being different, as long as we emphasize the difference of things, this is what our mind will follow, all these differences. And we will not come to the inner reality, the essence, that is the support, the reality of everything. What we want in our life is to find truth, to find stability, to find a foundation that does not move. Otherwise, everything in our life moves, changes. It is here today and it is gone tomorrow. Our own selves, we are here today. We weren't here some, 50, 80, 100 years back. We were not here. Now we're here. Another 50, 80, 100 years from now, we will be gone. So we're always concentrating on the differences here. The basic message is to concentrate on that which is the uniform reality, which is the foundation of everything, which is the heart, the essence of everything. So as the rainwater fallen on a high peak runs down the hillsides variously, even so who sees the attributes as different verily runs after them. But then as pure water poured into pure water, this is the opposite. Yad odakam shuddhe shuddham asiktam, as odaka, as water, shuddha, as pure water poured into pure water, tadrig eva bhavati, becomes the same. Yes, in the same way we will be able to see the Atman, we will be able to see that reality once we are aimed at seeing that sameness, that internal reality. So that is the basic message of Vedanta, that the essence is to see that sameness, on that from which the sun rises and that in which it sets, on that are fixed all the deities. No one ever transcends that. This is that reality. What is here is there, what is there is here. He who sees as though there is difference, he goes from death to death. But manasai vedam aptavyam, manasa, by the mind this is to be attained. He who sees the differences here, seems to see the differences here, goes from death to death. But the implication is not so the one who strives to see that fundamental reality. So the basic message is that this essence, this what we're all looking for, what we're all striving to attain, is already here. And the way to reach it is to attain, is to try to see that oneness, try to see that which is not that which is different, but that which is the same here. Now, in many ways, this is emphasized in our scriptures. But one of the ways that is emphasized is here. Some people consider this the main verse, the main teaching verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Other people have others as their favorite verses, but this has been considered to be one of the main teachings, and there's a fundamental reason for that. Sarvadharman parityajya, sarvadharman, all dharmas, sarvadharman parityajya. Surrendering all dharmas, mam ekam sharanam raja. Seek refuge, mam ekam, me, eka alone. Surrendering all dharmas, that means all paths, all ideas, all forms, all rights. Sarvadharman parityaja, going beyond all of that. Mam ekam sharanam raja, seek me alone. Again, this is the same idea. In all the many things that we have to do, in all the many goals that we're trying to attain, surrendering all that, then mam ekam sharanam raja. So who is this mam ekam sharanam? Me alone, seek refuge in me alone. Who is this? Me, it's that fundamental reality within everything. The main thing, the main message to remember is that in every perception, God alone exists. In every being, God alone exists. In everything, the fundamental reality of everything is God. If you take away the name and the form and the function, you say there's nothing left. That is what is wrong. Anything you look at, if you take away the name, the form, and the function, you think nothing is left. The name, form, and function are like leaves floating on the surface of an infinite ocean. As long as you're concentrated on the leaves and their movement and their color and this and that, then that's all you'll be interested in. But if you go beyond that, what is floating on the surface, that infinite reality on which those leaves are floating, that is what we, if we concentrate on that, that depth will come. And that is the truth that these teachers and scriptures are trying to show, that that every perception, everything, every event, every action, all whatsoever, everything floats on an ocean that is existence, consciousness, bliss, that is infinity, that is God. Every perception, that if we just remember that one idea, every perception and every thought and every action floats on an ocean of reality. And if we concentrate at all on that which is on the surface, omitting that support, that on which it is supported, then we will only see the surface. We will only go after the surface phenomena. But if we actually remember that everything we're looking at is really perceived, is really something that is floating on a divine reality, that is God alone who is the support of everything that's seen, that is supported here. It is the essence of everything that appears to us here, is that divine reality that has never come into existence, that will never decay, that will never disappear. We don't see anything of that normally. So the major thing we have to do is to try to perceive in everything that changes that one reality. To see that everything that changes is floating on an ocean of the unchangeable. That it is only God that is here, no matter what our experience is. And the experience has to be dealt with on the plane of this world, no doubt. But not on the plane of reality. On the plane of reality, it is only God that exists. So when we sit in meditation, we may be concentrating on some form or some holy image or some holy symbol. That is all right, but it's not the form, it's not the image, it's not the symbol that is the crucial part. The crucial part is that it is floating on a reality, and that we have to feel in our hearts. Having an intellectual understanding of that is very preliminary, and it doesn't go very far. One has to feel the reality of it. One has to feel that even these divine principles, divine forms, divine ideals, as well as everything in this universe, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, everything, what we're looking at is only a surface. And the closer you look at the surface, the thinner and more insubstantial the surface appears. That surface is floating, that what we see on the surface is floating on the reality of God. That God alone is present right now, every moment, every second, every instant. That is what we have to feel. Of course, if we do it an hour in the morning and an hour in the evening, that is fine. But what do we do the rest of the time? We scramble around and do this and that. That is not, you know, that's only a second best. Every moment we should feel that really it is only God that we are experiencing. That is the hope. That is the thing that we want to emphasize. And then it becomes real. It becomes more, you begin to feel that there's actually something there. There's something behind it. There's something that this is the truth. So the essence of Vedanta, which is described in all these scriptures, and next week we'll talk about how some of the traditions that have come, some of the holy sages have explained it, have talked about it. But this is the message that is being transmitted, that everything, that we're totally surrounded only by God. There is nothing else. And we should feel that everything that is part of our ordinary experience is floating on that reality. And it's good. We deal with it in the way it should. We should deal with it. That's fine. But we should never forget that really it is floating on a sea of divinity, a sea of infinity, a sea of Satchit Ananda, existence, of consciousness, of joy.